Hi, Bomb Squad. Welcome to The Future of Food, a Radio Cherry Bomb miniseries. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. The Cherry Bomb team toured America last year and traveled from Seattle to Chicago to Dallas and lots of places in between to ask women what the future of food means to them. Throughout this series, you're going to hear talks and panels that we recorded on each stop. You'll hear from restaurant revolutionaries, pastry pioneers, and even self-proclaimed unicorns. These members of the Bomb Squad shared their vision for what's next in their world and the world around them. I hope this series inspires you to stop and think about your future. Thank you to Kerrygold for supporting our tour and this mini-series. Kerrygold is the iconic Irish brand known for its award-winning butter and cheese made with milk from grass-fed cows. For this episode, we're heading to Detroit, Michigan, the iconic American town undergoing a radical transformation. We recorded this show at Good Cakes and Bakes, the delicious bake shop owned by our wonderful host, April Anderson. We're going to get things started with a talk from Amanda Saab, owner and baker at the Butter Bear Shop in Livonia, Michigan, and the co-founder of My Muslim Neighbor. Before we get the show on the road, let's check in with our sponsor. Since Kerrygold gave us the opportunity to travel around the U.S. and hear from women all over the country, we thought it would be fascinating to take a virtual detour to Ireland to hear how some of their delicious products are made. One of the cheeses we love in particular is the award-winning Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese. So we placed a call to Sarah Furno, a farmhouse cheesemaker who happens to know the history of how this very unique cheese came to be and who happened to create it.
Well, in the early 80s, what you did is you went to the library and you got a recipe book. So she went to the library and asked for a recipe book for making cheese. And it took 3 months to arrive because most people in Ireland weren't making cheese in the farmhouse kitchen. Maybe a bit of butter, but not cheese.
The she in the story isn't Sarah, but her mother, Jane Grubb, who invented the recipe for the famous Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese.
And she started experimenting in my granny's jam pan. Originally, she made hard cheddar-style cheeses. And then she thought, well, why not have a bit of fun and add a bit of spice in there? So she started making blue cheese. And she was the first person in Ireland to try to do that.
Want to try this groundbreaking blue cheese? Or maybe Kerrygold's savory shredded cheddar cheese? Or the garlic and herb butter? Visit KerrygoldUSA.com to check out the store locator and find out where you can purchase any of their award-winning cheese and butter. That's KerrygoldUSA.com. Let's welcome a good friend of Cherry Bombs, Amanda Saab.
So I was asked to give a five-minute talk about what I believe the future of food is. And when I thought about that, I thought, I don't need to invent anything or be innovative in the way I'm thinking about food. I can simply look at our past and how we've always come together at the dinner table. Communities connecting through neighborhood block parties, neighbors dropping in for a cup of tea and spending hours together, talking and sharing, learning and growing, and being vulnerable and leaving with that feeling, and that's okay. I'm not going to give you my autobiography because we only have 5 minutes. So I'll start when I was 16 years old and I was questioning authority and developing my sense of self. And it was at that time that I decided to start wearing hijab. And it was also at that time that I decided I had to have a KitchenAid stand mixer because all the really cool chefs on Food Network had one too. And it was that same KitchenAid stand mixer that helped me commission cakes for my family and friends who were way too generous and kind with my very uneven, topsy-turvy, they weren't supposed to be topsy-turvy cakes. After graduating social work school from Wayne State University, Hussein and I moved to Seattle, where I adjusted to 360 days of gloom and rain. I started taking public transit and eating granola like every day. It was also at that time that I started my career as a hospital social worker. And I was working in the neonatal intensive care unit with families who were facing some of the hardest moments of their lives. And I would carry that secondary trauma with me when I went home, and then I would bake. And I would take pictures of it, and my family were like, okay, you can't live that far away, share pictures without recipes. So I started a blog. AmandasPlate.com was born 6 years ago. And after that, I decided I want to take this a step further because there's nothing more stressful than a career in social work until I got to cooking for Gordon Ramsay on national TV. And because I was the first Muslim woman in hijab who appeared on a cooking show, I received a lot of press. Most of it was super positive. But then came the internet trolls. And I wasn't expecting that because I'd never experienced Islamophobic trolls before. And many told me I should just block them and ignore. But instead, I decided I want to challenge them and see where these beliefs were coming from. Years after that, President Donald Trump called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims coming into this country. And as an American-born Muslim woman who wears hijab, I initially cried, and then I checked myself and was like, you're not going to cry about this. You're going to do something about it. So I turned to Hussein and I said, I'd love to invite our neighbors over for dinner so they can get to know us as Muslims. He said, okay, that sounds great. And I was like, and our colleagues. He's like, okay, yeah, sure. And strangers on the internet. And there was a long pause and he's like, if you think that's going to work, then let's do it. And so we did. And we hosted our first dinner with 18 people that we couldn't fit in our condo, so we had to have it in the clubhouse. And we quickly learned that 18 is way too many people to have a dialogue with. So we hosted a second and a third and a fourth. And then there was a woman who showed up at our door and said, whoa, your house is totally normal. And Hussein said, no, the camels are tied out in the back. And it was at 1 o'clock in the morning, yes, sometimes our dinners go that long, that same woman said, I have something to share. And she said, as she looked me straight in the eye, I once hated you. What? Yeah, I watched MasterChef and thought, oh, one of those people is on an American cooking show? But as she worked with her pastor and a therapist, for 3 years, she came to overcome her fear of Muslims and found herself with an invitation to dinner with your Muslim neighbor. And she not only came, but she felt safe enough to share her vulnerability and feel like she wouldn't be judged by this group of people. We've since hosted 22 dinners in 4 states, and we'll soon be releasing our toolkit so everyone can host their own dinners wherever they are. But it's that same connectivity in food that allowed me to start my bakery in Livonia, a community that's mostly white. And they've accepted me and embraced me, and we've been able to connect through my cookies and our beautiful cakes. And I look at our team, and I'm just so happy and excited to be able to continue to share in a different way, but still connecting through food. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda, for sharing your story with us. That little one you heard in the audience, that was Amanda's baby daughter. If you find yourself near Livonia, Michigan, go visit Amanda at her Butter Bear shop. Before we get to our panel, let's return to my conversation about the award-winning Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese. I wanted to know more about Beechmount Farm, Sarah's family farm, so I asked her to tell us a little bit more about this magical place.
We have a lot of trees. That's why it's called Beechmount. We've got lovely deep soils here. It's a very traditional farming area in Ireland. And we've loads of small meadows on the farm and loads of hedgerows. The cows are out in the fields. We've also got ponies and dogs and hens and all the things you'd expect to have on a farm. We live on the farm, so we want to keep it a nice environment to be in.
And in addition to the beautiful landscape, Sarah also has one of the best commutes.
Our farmhouse is in the middle of the farm, and then I don't have far to go to work. I've only got to go just across the farmyard. I'm down at the cheese dairy.
It sounds like Sarah has the perfect situation to go with the perfect cheese. Want to try Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese for yourself? Or maybe you'd like to try Kerrygold's famous butter or their new slices and shreds. Visit KerrygoldUSA.com to find a stockist near you. Ready for our panel? We'll be talking to Lisa Lidwinski of Sister Pie, Molly Mitchell, owner of Rose's Fine Food, Dorothy Hernandez, the writer, editor, and founder of Sirop, April Anderson of Good Cakes and Bakes, and Kimberly Chow of the Food Book Fair and Allied Media Projects. We kick things off with Lisa and the idea of sisterhood in business.
There's so many things that I could say, but I think I'll talk about the thing that seems the most recent in my kind of thought process, which is, I think, taking the ego out of food. There have been so many things that we've been working on at Sister Pie and questions that have come up with me writing the cookbook and talking with folks about the process of that. And I realized that like all of the ways that food becomes negative in the restaurant industry is when an ego is attached to it at the very heart of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so someone said to me the other day, I can't remember who it was, but like, how can you let your employees like make the soup every day? Aren't you freaking out that it's not going to taste exactly how you want it to taste? And isn't that like a reflection of who you are and what you're representing? And it was like in a moment like that that I realized that's not what this is about. It's not about what people think about what I'm doing or what people know about what I'm doing or what I'm sharing with people. It's about being able to share those things without having like a personal egotistical stake in it.
Well, I think that's even reflective in the name that you chose for your place, Sister Pie. Why did you choose that name?
It's a nickname that my younger sister and I started calling each other in college. And I think for us, you know, my sister and I don't call each other that anymore because now there's a lot more going on with it. But I think it does really now reflect kind of the idea of sisterhood in business and what that can mean. And mm-hmm. I think I've learned through running the business that it can mean a lot of different things and that I'm not the only creator of the definition of what sisterhood is. And so we have like a really great staff of women that kind of make that story change all the time. And I think allowing all of their voices and opinions and thoughts to come to the table is another example of kind of taking the ego out of things and knowing like I'm not the authority on this all the time. Like I can be wrong on a lot of stuff. And they tell me about it, so.
So Molly, how about you? What is the future of food for you?
Future of food for me is having good food be accessible on a larger scale. So just basically lifting up people who are making good food and growing good food and businesses that are taking care of their employees. I feel like that's sort of the direction we're headed in. And I hope that it gets embraced on a larger scale. I keep reading about, you know, just like profits plummeting for large scale food operations. And I hope that we're moving towards a future where people don't have to think so much about food, like on top of the rest of their lives, that they can just go to a store and know that they're buying something that is good, mm-hmm. you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Dorothy, how about you?
So the future of food to me is, so going back to why I started Sirop, it wasn't so much I couldn't find great Filipino food here. It was, I'm originally from Chicago. So when I moved to Detroit, I didn't see that many Filipino restaurants compared to like bigger cities. So I wanted to raise awareness of this food that I love so much. So it started off like that, but over the years, it's kind of evolved more into using Sirop as kind of like a platform for personal storytelling, mm-hmm. just kind of like tying the dishes that we do to a story, and kind of like what Amanda does. Like, I think that's the future. Like, especially since we live in such tough political times, and there's so much animosity and hostility. I think bringing people to the table over food, I think that will be the future. We don't do a lot of events now, but when we do, there's always a storytelling component to it. Mm-hmm. I recently did an event with the Shady Ladies Literary Society, mm-hmm. and if you aren't familiar with it, it's just this amazing concept where Amy Hammerl brings together a female chef and an emerging female author and pairs them up for a night of readings and dinner collaboration. So I would love to do more things like that, and I would love to see more events like that, just women collaborating, telling stories over good food.
What brought you to Detroit?
My now ex-boyfriend and job that I don't have anymore. But it worked out, don't worry, I'm good.
But you're doing okay.
I'm good. Doing better than okay, okay without either of us.
So April, how about you? Future of food.
I see the future of food as being kind of like what Molly said, more where people aren't having to think about it as much and more about people asking the question and knowing who the maker of the food is, where the food was grown at, how it was processed and made, more so knowing the story behind the food, and get out of having so many processed foods and getting back into where you cook the meal at home and you knew where the tomatoes came from, you knew where the onion came from, you knew where the lemon came from, the meat, you knew that the meat was killed in a humane way. Just going back to old country type cooking, I really feel food is going back there. And I see that here at the bakery, when people come in, they connect to us because we're able to answer the questions that they ask and they get to talk to us, right? The people who are actually making the food. It's not like it's in a grocery store and I have no idea who made it, how it was processed. They actually get to come here, and sometimes they come early enough, they get to see us in the process of making the food. So yeah, I really think that's exactly what food is going back to, people wanting to know where it's coming from and how it's being made.
So Kimberly, what are you doing in Detroit?
What am I doing here? The first one is I am the new communications director at Allied Media Projects, which is an amazing nonprofit based here in Detroit, but with roots and branches throughout the world, where we bring people together around media-based organizing. And that's building pirate radio, that's teaching kids to DJ, that's making art, or that's making food and storytelling and sharing it in order to create a more just and creative world. And that's how I started spending more time in Detroit, is being involved in the big conference that they produce every year in June. Though I originally grew up not far from here, about 10 miles north. And AMC kept bringing me back, and now AMP is why I'm going to be here a little bit more permanently for a little while in the foreseeable future. It's also how I met April at a session at the AMC in June, co-hosted by Julia Tertian, another member of the Bomb Squad, great cookbook author. How I saw Dorothy present a session about for us, by us storytelling, basically, in a landscape where many cultural food narratives are often whitewashed in mainstream media. So to answer the second question, which I think is probably a takeoff of the original question, if I can even say something that's a little different than these great answers that everyone has given thus far, or just to sort of reemphasize and lift those up again, is that I think the future of food will go sort of back toward the history of food. As you're saying, that it was for us, by us, there was less ego there, it was more collective, where people knew the food that they were touching and they were making and they were sharing, and that they were doing it for community. And that they were able to talk about it and share it out that way. Yeah.
So I want to know how you plan to be the change that you would like to see, or the future that you would like to see. So Lisa, we'll throw it back at you. What are...
I think, especially like piggybacking off of what my first answer was, I think trying to be transparent in everything we do. Mm-hmm. Something that I was really inspired by when I was first kind of learning about Zingerman's mission, and even in just my interactions with the folks that work there, you know, I email them and ask them, what do you do if this is happening with your employee? And they write me back immediately and like share their document on that. Mm-hmm. And just this idea that nothing I can give you is too much information, like lifting other food businesses up that way. And so I think kind of challenging myself to be as open with my experience and with my knowledge as I possibly can, and encourage that amongst my employees as well, as a boss, you know, and as the person who, you know, created the recipes. Like, there is this period of time where it feels like I'm the only one who knows how to do this one thing, and I'm gonna keep being the only one who knows how. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, it's so much more powerful to like give a bunch of people that experience and skill and trust. And so that's how I'm kind of personally working on it, and hopefully trying to share that as I speak about it too. Mm-hmm.
All right, Molly, your turn. How are you gonna be the change?
We just try to continue to commit to figuring out like where we're going to get things and making sure that it's the best possible thing we can get. We had a question recently about whether the meat that we were buying was actually coming from where the people said it was coming from. Mm-hmm. And so we had to have this really awkward interaction with the people who were sourcing it. And then we went out and just found somebody who is like raising chickens, pasture raising, and is really passionate about it. Now we just buy directly from her. And that's like just doing those little things and like committing to other people who are trying to do things in a way that is like has a positive environmental impact and is not making things worse, essentially. Mm-hmm. So just like trying to stay present in the business and make sure that it's like you really are doing what you're saying you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that you're also like collaborating with people who are doing that as well.
Dorothy, how are you? How do you want to be the change?
Just kind of making sure using my skills and passion for telling stories to make sure that they get told, especially the ones that don't have a voice. Kind of what I was talking about in the AMC panel that I did with another local writer, Serena, and I call her my Chicago counterpart, Sarah Lynn, who also has a Filipino pop-up in Chicago, or she used to, she kind of stepped back from that. Making sure that when we see stories that about our food and our culture that aren't being represented correctly, just to kind of push back on that, like we talked a lot about how Bon Appetit kind of just messes up everything that's Asian, it seems like. you know, just making sure that we're there to, you know, tell those stories properly. You know, when I used to work at a local magazine, like I would always try to make sure that I was reaching out to writers of color who could, you know, speak to the diversity, the great food diversity that we have in Detroit. And sometimes when you don't have that diversity on staff, it's pretty obvious. So just constantly pushing for that change, whether I'm in that position to make that change or just using, you know, my platform as a writer to tell those stories.
Mm-hmm. What can everyone in this room as diners do along those same lines?
Oh, that's a good question. first of all, just supporting businesses owned by people of color, like, you know, April's amazing bakery here or Amanda's bakery, you know, just going there, learning more about the people who run the business and their stories too.
April, how do you want to be the change?
So as I was saying about being able to tell the story, know where the food is coming from. So one of the things that we do here now, because I am such a control freak that I like want to hold on to everything, I had to learn to start delegating and giving stuff away, right? But then we'll do a new recipe, and at one point I used to just be like, oh, we're gonna try this recipe without telling why we're trying it. Where this came from? Like, biscuits, we are trying so hard to get a certain type of biscuit we want to make. And why I want to make a biscuit, because it reminds me of my grandmother. She used to make these biscuits, we used to eat it with this syrup, but I want to be able to make that here at the bakery. So we've been trying that. But being able to sit down with my assistants and be like, you know, this is what I want to try. Or asking them to come up with something. So it's always interesting when they come up with it. But being able to share, and also being able to explain, like I said, why we got that recipe, so when a customer asks that, they don't have to look for me to answer it, mm-hmm. because I'm trying so hard, like we redid our website and everything, I'm trying so hard to put myself in the back, because I want Good Cakes and Bakes to be Good Cakes and Bakes, but it doesn't have to be April Good Cakes and Bakes, mm-hmm. right? It can be everybody here, everybody who works here is Good Cakes and Bakes, so them knowing the story of why something happened, why we do this, why we are so adamant about making sure we're not using styrofoam, why we're so adamant about making sure that we're composting stuff, being able to answer those questions and tell the story themselves. Mm-hmm. So it like empowers the staff here to be like they really are a part of it. So those are the things that we've done, and we're still there. So many things that we want to do and we're trying to, but being able to empower our staff and making sure that everybody knows the story and knows why we're doing something. Whenever we make a change, explaining why we're making that change, why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why are you adamant about doing all those things?
There are several reasons. Like, we're adamant about organic because of it started because of my nieces. My nieces were like developing so early, and I felt like it was because of the milk and the meat that they were eating. And Michelle was like, oh, we gotta do organic. And then composting, because we wanna have a little footprint. We wanna have as little carbon footprint we wanna leave here from Good Kings and Bakes. And making sure like we never have used styrofoam, because we just know that just sits there, right? When we leave this earth, it'll still be sitting here. Making sure that we are being proactive about it. So we are definitely a triple bottom business. Profit is last, people, planet is first and second. But making sure that the things that we're doing here speaks that without us having to say it. So we want you to be able to know when you come in here that we are about compost and recycling, because you can see it in this type of packaging that we use. You'll be able to tell that, right? We want you to be able to see, you can see behind our counter that we compost. You see a bunch of eggshells, you see our coffee grinds, you see that. But being able to see people, being able to see that without us telling it,
right.
That's what makes your story good. It's when people, you don't have to tell it. People mm-hmm. can actually see and know that that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm.
And did you crack the code on those biscuits?
We did. This past week, we got some very good ones. Because, so my grandmother's biscuits was like super flaky, and if you touch it, it fall apart. Which is wonderful, right? But I want a biscuit that I can make a sandwich with. Mm. So I still need to be flaky and buttery, but it needs to be a little sturdy. But not dry, where you can knock somebody out with it. but have a sturdy that when you cut it, it doesn't fall apart. And this weekend, Tania has been, she's been...
Aww.
grinding up butter, grinding up butter. But this last batch that we did this past weekend has been great.
Nice.
Yes.
All right, everybody know what you have to do this weekend, right?
Come get this one, yes.
Clear.
I got to come back on the weekend.
Yes, you have to come back on the weekend.
So, Kimberly, how about you? I know you've got a lot on your plate.
I think for me, there are two parts to it. First of all, and this is something other folks have said already, is how to uplift and amplify other folks that are already doing the work and how to listen. And that's one of the things that we talk about at AMP, at Allied Media Projects. First, we begin by listening when it comes to solving problems or addressing needs and wants and desires and goals in our different communities, is to see who's already doing the work, amplify what they're doing. You don't have to reinvent the wheel or open another restaurant, or if there are people doing good work out there whose work you love and you can support. So that's a big thing I'm about. And then another thing is, and I think this is tricky, the question of how much to put yourself out there, especially when there's this idea of ego, when there obviously have been, or historically have been, a lot of food businesses, a lot of restaurants that have been dominated by male ego. Is to, when can, like, what feels good for you in when you can put yourself out there, if you can be public facing as a person, as a leader, as a model for the rest of your community? How do you make space when you are taking space? How do you make space for other people and make sure you're lifting other people up as you climb? That's something I think a lot about, especially as someone that mostly is in behind the scenes and sort of convenes people. Usually I'm like, I'm just back here with the headset and the clipboard. But especially now that I'm back to doing more of the writing and the storytelling and the communicating work, which is what I did before I started producing events, and people ask me to speak on panels like this one, I need to make sure that I know what balance is good for me and also is good for my communities that I'm part of, and then good for the folks that I want to be building with.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea of making space but taking space. Because April, I'll admit this, as soon as you said you're trying to, like, not, you know, put yourself out there so much, I was like, oh God, put yourself out there. Because so often, you know, what we do at Cherry Bomb is we tell other women's stories, and I can't tell you how much time I spend looking at their websites, reading your bios, looking at your Instagram accounts, and there's a lot of modesty. And I just want to see you all, like, really get as much attention as you can for that.
So I say that because for the longest, it was just me doing all the baking here, right? Everything. So then when I started getting assistants, customers who are used to me doing all the baking, it's like, I want you to make the cake.
Right.
No, it's going to taste the same if Tanio or Mario makes it. And so then, and they'll be like, no, I can tell when they make it. I'd be like, I've seen you buy the chocolate cake for the past 2 weeks. And it was like, yeah, and it was good. But I see him back there making it, and I say, yeah, he was making it 2 weeks ago, too. But it was just because people had been so used to me doing everything that they were like, they wasn't ready for that, for new people to do it. And I just want people to know that regardless of if I'm here or not, it's going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I had to, like, start stepping back. It was because I didn't want people to be like, I'm not going to come if April's not baking.
Right.
It's good cakes and bakes. It's not just April.
Yeah. I think a lot of operators struggle with that same issue when you become the face of a place and people expect you to always be in the kitchen, always be on premises.
Yes,
to the point where, like, you can't. You're supposed to be there 24 hours a day.
They're like, how are you in New York? Is the bakery not open? Yeah, the bakery's open. It's okay. You can still go over there. Yeah.
So we're going to make this a little bit of a speed round, but because this is the future of food, I asked everyone to think about what they want to be doing in the year 2028.
I think about how, and this is sort of reflective of the conversations we've just had, like what my role specifically will be as the business grows, and how I've had these opportunities to be very outward facing and write a book and speak at panels and talk about things. And I see that I have a potential to take myself out of the day-to-day of the business more so that I can interact with people, talk about my business experience, hear about business experiences, and kind of work toward those communal conversations about what the future of food is, and that I can even potentially, like, be financially sustained by that kind of work, which allows me to potentially reinvest money back in my business in a different way so that I'm not reliant on my business for my own well-being. And I think what that really means for us at Sister Pie is I'd like to eventually look toward being a worker-owned business. And I think 5 years feels real soon, but 10 years feels like a really good time, and I think that's a great way to realize, like, a big part of the mission.
Are there many role models for having a business like that?
I first learned about it when I took a trip to San Francisco, like right before I started Sister Pie. Mm-hmm. It was actually one of the reasons that I wanted to start Sister Pie was because I was so inspired by that. So I think there's like the employee-owned bakeries in San Francisco, like Arizmendi and what's that other one that's really...
Cheese Board,
I think. Yeah, Cheese Board Collective. No. And so it's something that I don't know a lot about, but I want to. And so it's a goal.
That's great. Molly, 2028.
A lot of big plans.
Sitting on a beach somewhere.
Damn restaurant open. But so I actually have talked a lot with Eggy Ding, who's my business partner at Roses and in the new restaurant. We were talking about having more small restaurants that sort of activate a small economy where you're like using local products and doing a worker-owned style of business, but maybe as a truck stop model.
As a truck stop model.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
We just want to own more diners, basically. So,
very cool. Mm-hmm. Dorothy?
Oh, man, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. maybe somebody on this panel. You guys are all badass. When I did Syrup, it evolved to what it is now, and there's like so many younger Filipino chefs across the country just kind of raising awareness of it. Like Filipino food has such a strong home cooked culture that I think that's why you never saw a lot of it before. When Filipinos moved and immigrated over here, they didn't want to open restaurants. They wanted their kids to go to college and be nurses, and that was never going to happen for me because I suck at science, but I really love food, and there's a lot of people my age who are Filipino, second generation Filipino Americans who feel the same way. So in 10 years from now, I would just love to grow with this movement and raise more awareness of Filipino food and just show the diversity of it, because Philippines has 7,000 plus islands. And there's just so much to explore. So I would just love to showcase that off to everyone else.
April, 2028.
Good cakes and bakes to be here. Maybe a couple more locations. But I don't see April being here 10 years from now. I see us, me and Michelle, still working on her. But I see us living in the Catskills with two chickens.
Nice.
With two chickens. I don't know. And I'll be able
just two.
Just two chickens. Just two chickens. That's enough. But I would like to do a lot more. I would like to still bake, maybe teach baking inside of our house, but more real relaxed, very country living is where I would like to be in 10 years.
Nice.
Yes.
Michelle, you down with that?
She is about the New York part, but she isn't because she doesn't want to leave her mom and here. Yeah.
Kimberly, 2028.
I don't know.
Yeah, we sprung this on Kimberly.
Though I'm really inspired by these answers, I really like the idea of sort of making yourself obsolete by building a better business and supporting other folks that are working for you and with you. So I'm really inspired by that and being able to move on to other challenges or still be able to do what you love or still be able to have your hands in Sister Pie or in Good Cakes and Bakes, but also making room for yourself to have other things that aren't work.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our panel and our audience members for such a wonderful discussion. The Bomb Squad is such a supportive group. I'm sure you all took the panelists' words to heart, but especially Kimberly Chow's when she talked about uplifting the people around you. I know that's what a lot of you do every single day. Let's talk about Detroit for a minute. We had such a great time in this special city, and I hope you all plan a visit. Our visit was way too short, but I loved hanging out at April's Good Cakes and Bakes and getting to talk all things buttercream with her and her wife, Michelle. We also visited Sister Pie and ordered everything in the bakery case. Their cranberry pie was mind-blowing, and the recipe just happens to be in their great cookbook. I'm a big fan of Sister Pie's Instagram stories, so it was cool to see the team in real life, IRL. When I return to Detroit, I'm definitely going to visit Rose's Fine Food and Chef Kate Williams, Lady of the House. Our show was produced by Jess Seidman and supported by Kerrygold. Thank you to April and the team at Good Cakes and Bakes for hosting us. And thank you to all of our speakers and to the amazing members of the Bomb Squad who joined us for these tapings. Thank you for listening to the Future of Food miniseries. Here's to a delicious tomorrow.